I'd like to call this meeting of the Board of Adjustments to order at this time. And Bob, if you would give us the roll call.
Dave Clemenson.
Here.
Bob Hanslon.
Here.
Mark Weiss is not here. David Nelson.
Here.
And Tom Gideon, sorry. Brilliant. And we do have a quorum.
All right. Would you give us the explanation of the public hearing procedures for tonight?
I would like to welcome everybody this evening to the January 18th, 2012 Board of Adjustment public hearing being held in order to hear a variance request, an appeal of a Planning Commission denial, and a reconsideration of condition numbers 4 and 9 of the decision of record for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. The Board of Adjustment hearing process is governed by the provisions of Missouri Revised Statutes, the Taney County Development Guidance Code, and the adopted Board of Adjustment bylaws. Public hearings are held on each variance or appeal request, which is filed with the Planning Department. I would like at this time to place the Taney County Development Guidance Code into evidence as Exhibit A. The staff report for each case is Exhibit B. The staff file, including all pertinent information for each case, is Exhibit C. And the Board of Adjustment bylaws is Exhibit D for each of the cases being heard this evening. A staff report will be read for each application, followed by a video and any questions for staff. If you do at this time wish to comment upon any of the applications that will be heard this evening, you must sign up in the front here, in the front of the room. Anyone wishing to speak either for or against a request must be sworn in and will therefore be providing sworn testimony. Registration for comment will cease before the hearing begins. When it's your opportunity to provide sworn testimony, your name will be called by the Board of Adjustment Chairman. Please walk to the podium at the front of the room to address the board. All comments or questions are to be addressed to the board, not to anyone in the audience. All speakers who are not a party to the case shall be limited to 5 minutes. Upon reaching 4 minutes, a yellow card will be displayed, indicating that you have approximately 1 minute remaining to address the board. Upon the expiration of 5 minutes, a red card will be displayed, indicating that time has expired. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob. As it is our normal practice in the month of January, we need to establish the new officers of chairman and vice chairman for the coming year. And at this time, I would entertain a motion for chairman of the Board of Adjustments for this 2012 year.
I would move that Dave Clemenson be elected as chairman.
I second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Any other nominations? Hearing none, I'd call for a vote. Bob, how would you vote?
For the election.
Tom?
For the election.
David?
Aye.
Thank you very much. I can try to continue to do what I've been doing, right or wrong. Entertain a motion for vice chairman position.
Make a motion to remain the same as we are now.
Would that be a motion for Bob Hanslon?
I mean for Bob, yeah.
All right.
Second.
I have a first and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote for Bob Hanslon as vice chairman. Tom?
For the motion.
David?
For.
Chairman, yes. Would you like to vote?
No.
All right, thank you. Would you give us the governing statutes for the event tonight?
Okay. The Board of Adjustment shall have the following powers, and it shall be its duty. 1. To hear and decide appeals where it is alleged there is an error of law in any order, requirement, decision, or determination made by an administrative official in the enforcement of the county zoning regulations. 2. To hear and decide all matters referred to it or which it is required to determine under the zoning regulations adopted by the County Commission as herein provided. 3. Where by reason of exceptional narrowness, shallowness, shape or topography, or other extraordinary or exceptional situation or condition of a specific piece of property, the strict application of any regulation adopted under sections 64.845 to 64.880 would result in peculiar and exceptional difficulties to or exceptional and demonstrable undue hardship upon the owner of the property as an unreasonable deprivation of use, as distinguished from a mere grant of a privilege to authorize upon an appeal relating to the property. A variance from the strict application so as to relieve the demonstrable difficulties or hardships, provided the relief can be granted without substantial detriment to the public good and without substantially impairing the intent, purpose, and integrity of the zone plan as embodied in the zoning regulations and map. In exercising the above powers, the board may reverse or affirm wholly or partially, or may modify the order, requirement, decision, or determination appealed from, and may take such order, requirement, decision, or determination as ought to be made, and to that end, shall have all the powers of the officer from whom the appeal is taken.
Thank you. Our first case tonight is Jeffrey Bork, case number 2011-007A. I'm sorry. 0010V. Give us the staff report, Bob.
Okay. This is case number 2011-10. The applicant is Jeffrey Bork. The applicant is requesting a variance from Section 9, Table 1, Property Line Setbacks of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. The property in question is located at 335 and 337 Parkside Drive. It's actually located here. It's currently one piece of property with two existing residences on it. It falls within the Oliver Township, Section 27, Township 22, Range 22. And this is just to kind of indicate where this sits in relation, in general terms here. The subject property, again, consists of Lot 6 of the Parkside Beach subdivision. It's an approximately 18,104 square foot lot and contains two existing residences. The residence located at 337 Parkside Drive was constructed in 1962, and the residence at 335 was constructed in 1993. These two existing residences, which would be located here, it's a little hard to see with the trees, are approximately 8 feet apart. The general description here of the variance that's requested, the applicant is planning to subdivide this existing Lot 6 into two separate lots, a Lot 6A and 6B. And basically, each of these two lots would contain an existing single-family residence. But with the new property line being created between the two, the applicant is having to request a setback variance because they wouldn't be able to meet our setback requirements. Per the provisions of Section 9, Table 1, of the Development Guidance Code, a 7-foot property line setback is required from the sides of the lot, and per the submitted plat of Lot 6A and 6B of Paradise Beach, the existing residence located on Lot 6A, or 337 Parkside Drive, would be approximately 3.4 feet from the newly created property line, and the existing residence on Lot 6B, or 335 Parkside Drive, would be approximately 5 feet from the newly created property line. In summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this variance request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the board. First, approval of a variance. This would be approval of a variance from Section 9, Table 1, or property line setbacks of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. And it would allow for a 3.6-foot side property line setback variance on lot 6A, and basically a 2-foot side property line setback variance on lot 6B. And of course, the other two requirements would be proposed requirements would be compliance with all other provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code, and third, that the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days or the approval shall expire. Put together just a really brief video of the property here. And this is the drive coming into the property. And like I said, there's actually two existing houses located on this. It's a little difficult to see. This is the home that was, I believe, built in 1963. With this home being built later, there's about an 8-foot distance between the two homes. I also shot just a really quick footage kind of showing how the two homes sit in relationship to one another. Okay.
All right. With those that would like to speak on this case, please stand and raise your right hand, and I swear you in. You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. Michelle Brooke, or Bork. Anything to add to what has already been presented to us?
No, I'm here if there are any questions and just a little additional information that might be helpful. The purpose of our submission is we are forming a living trust for our daughter, Caitlin, who happens to be here. And we want to be able to have an individual property that we could solely have in her name should something happen, and she be the beneficiary of that.
And is she going to get the big house?
Well, not so far.
Okay. I presume that this property is served by the county sewer, is it not?
Any yes, it is. Yes.
All right. Any questions? Ms. Bork?
Was there some way we arrived at one of them being 3.4 feet and the other one being 5 foot? Did that have to do with the porch on the... Or on the video,
once he puts in the new property line splitting the two, from my understanding, that's just kind of where it fell. I thought you may be able to.
There's an excellent depiction there that he can explain.
Excuse me. Would you let her finish first? I'm sorry.
That's okay. He can explain it better, but it as far as I know relates to an actual corner of the lot there in the residence.
All right. And Jack Houseman?
Yes, sir. The reason we did that, Tom, is the porch. There's a sidewalk porch going off the side of one house, so we wanted to put that all on one inclusive property, and it got the lion's share of it. And we tried to split the available between the house and the porch evenly, but that's why.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you very much. That'll conclude the public input portion, and the board will make its decision right now. Are you ready to form a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Motion been made by David Nelson to approve the request for the lot split with the side variances of between the two houses as noted in the report. I have a second from Tom. Any further discussion?
Nope.
Hearing none, I'll call for the vote then. David, how would you vote?
For the motion.
Tom?
For the motion.
Bob?
For the motion.
Chairman likewise, give it. So, have approval. The next case before us is 2011-0007A, Donald and Judith Hahn, staff report, please, Bob.
Okay. This is case number 2011-7A. The applicant is applicants are Donald and Judith Hahn. The applicants are seeking to appeal the Planning Commission denial of a special use permit, case number 2011-23, requesting to utilize an existing grandfathered single-family residence for nightly rental. The subject property is located at 798 Parkview Drive in the Hollister area, within the Oliver Township, Section 27, Township 22, Range 22. Here's the property in question. And basically, the background on this, according to the assessor's information, the home was originally constructed in 1983. The property was purchased by Donald and Judith Hahn in 1984. The applicants have indicated that this single-family residence has been utilized basically as a rental home since the time of purchase. In 2007, there was a special use permit proposal at that time that came before the Planning Commission within the Poverty Point area, in which they were requesting both nightly rental and a bed and breakfast, which at that time experienced a large amount of opposition. That application was denied and later unsuccessfully appealed to the Board of Adjustment. And basically, at that time, a sign was erected in the area which indicated that nightly or weekly rental of any residences violates county codes and may be prosecuted. However, the Taney County Development Guidance Code does not indicate that nightly rental violates any of the adopted regulations, so long as a special use permit is obtained. On November 21st of 2011, the Taney County Planning Commission denied the special use permit request by Donald and Judith Hahn, seeking to utilize this home for nightly rental. The Planning Commission voted to deny this request by a unanimous vote of 7-0. The Planning Commission based its decision on the unanimous belief that the proposed nightly rental of the home would not be compatible with the surrounding residential area. This is the subject property. It's on an approximately 120-foot by 170-foot lot, and it contains a 1,356-square-foot single-family house located at 798 Parkview Drive. In review, the applicants have stated that the exterior appearance of the single-family home will remain the same. The Development Guidance Code defines nightly rental as a residential building, structure, or part thereof that may be rented for any period of time less than 30 days. Currently, the applicant would have the ability to rent the residence basically for a period of 30 days or greater. The applicants are proposing to rent the home on a weekly basis and have indicated that only a single family will be allowed to rent the proposed property, with no more than six adult guests being allowed to stay at any one time. The property is currently served by a private well and the Taney County Regional Sewer District. The residence is in compliance with the setback requirements. The existing parking area there is approximately 20 feet by 70 feet and would accommodate approximately six parking spaces, which would exceed the requirements of the Development Guidance Code. During the Planning Commission public hearing process, the applicants did further indicate that they would be willing to construct a circle drive basically on the property here that would accommodate for boat turnarounds and things of that nature. A condition had been proposed which would require a privacy fence upon the western property boundary if this was to be approved. The applicant has stated that the neighboring property owner is adamantly opposed to a requirement for privacy fencing. The project received a score of -5 on the policy checklist out of a maximum possible score of 29. The relative policies receiving a negative score consist of emergency water supply, solid waste disposal service, and use compatibility. And in summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request, the Planning Commission denial of this decision of record for Division 3 permit 2000, 11-23, shall be reversed. If the board approves the request, the following requirements shall apply unless revised by the board. First off, compliance with the provisions of the Taney County Development Guidance Code. Second, no outside storage of equipment or solid waste materials. Third, the decision is subject to all existing easements. Fourth, a circle drive shall be constructed with a second access being provided east of the existing driveway. Fifth, a privacy fence shall be provided upon the western property boundary between the property in question and the adjacent single-family residence. And number six, the decision of record shall be filed with the Taney County Recorder's Office within 120 days, or the approval shall expire. And we've got just a brief video of the site here. This is the front of the property in question. And like I said, this is the existing parking area. The proposed circle drive would actually fall over in that area. And we just did a quick 360 kind of showing some of the neighboring properties. And then I believe I also did a shot just to show what was back behind the residence. Here's an adjoining residence and kind of a shot from the backyard.
Before we start, yes. Mr. Atchley, could you go to the frontest page?
And
the case number there is 0010V, which I believe was the case number for...
And this is an error.
Okay. So, for the record, the case number should be 2011-00078.
That's okay. Correct, yes.
Thank you.
Would those that like to speak on this behalf tonight please rise? I'll swear you in. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you very much. Is anybody here for the Hans? Are you here, Ms. Han?
I'm her daughter.
Oh, all right. And your name?
Anna.
Come on up. Yes.
He presented most of the information that we had presented to him.
Could you speak into the microphone?
I'm sorry. Please. The only other new information that I would have, and not necessarily new, is that the denial was based on that it was a residential area, and we sit between two condo motel establishments on diagonal corners of our property, so that Poverty Point is not strictly a residential neighborhood.
All right. Would anybody have any questions for Ms. Taylor?
Is that property residential, classified as residential, or?
Yes.
It is residential?
Yes.
Okay.
And they would be seeking a special use permit to request nightly rental.
Okay. Where are the condos?
Let me... Sorry. I don't know if I put the...
What was your question, David?
Where are the condos located that she's referring to?
The best of my knowledge, the two... Do I have something to point with that?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Sorry.
Okay. I'm not that familiar with this diagram. This is the corner of our property. Right here is the Vickery Resort, that is. And right approximately here is the Rockview Resort. Rockview is 0.2 miles from our property, and this one is 0.19 miles traveling this direction, actually approximately 300 feet this way and 600 to 700 feet to this one.
And rather than being a resort, they are now selling as condo units?
They are actual resorts. They have always been resorts, but this one actually has advertised as condominiums on their website. That's
right.
I've never been to either facility or ever stated them, but they are listed in as Vickery Resort and Rockview Resort.
They're nightly rentals.
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
In making this decision, how did the Planning and Zoning Committee did they make an error in the law?
Well, I'm not saying that an error was made necessarily. I just think the guidance code concerning nightly rentals is very vague in the guidance code. The denial was based on it was a residential area. Our appeal is just saying that maybe it's not totally residential. If it were zoned, you know, like other counties, which I know Caney County is working on that, then would it be zoned strictly a residential area, or would it have to be commercial or a mix of the two? I don't even know how zoning codes go. But what I'm saying is we're not just strictly in a residential area. Is why we're asking for the decision.
In our code book on page 51 makes reference to
yeah, 4.7.
Yeah, 4.7 describes the nightly rentals. And I think Bob alluded to it on his report that a residential building structure or part thereof that may be rented for any period of less than 30 days constitutes a nightly rental. So I don't know if it's vague from that standpoint, but it does require a special use permit.
Right, and that's the process that we have proceeded to go through.
All right. Any further questions? Thank you.
Lay your little toy up here, Bob.
Okay.
Carolyn Maxwell.
Good evening. I'm just here to say that I'm a resident there, and my whole majority of everything I own is right there, and I've spent all my life to be able to live in a nice neighborhood like that. So as a lot of other people who live there, and we just hate to see someone come in, especially they don't live in the area, they won't be able to police it, and living in the area, I've lived here over 40 years, and I know these things from what other people have told me, and people that have houses in other places that have nightly rentals. People come in, they have big parties, they're not... They can't control whether there's only eight people or six people, you know, a dozen more comes in, they have big parties, they party all night, they leave their trash, and the law's called because of, you know, a lot of things going on, and who's gonna oversee it? Because there's nobody there to oversee it, and the neighbors have to deal with it. And then it just runs down the value of our neighborhood. And furthermore, it's a small house, it's one bathroom, and it's a driveway. I know they're going to make a bigger driveway, but, you know, it's just going to mess up the neighborhood, as well as there is a covenant there that says that there's no businesses to be put there. The original developer... When he developed it, or the two developers, Bill Cook and Jim Arne, developed it, and they put both the Vickery and the other resort there at the time, and it absolutely says that it's to be strictly residential. So, Anyhow, that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Any questions for her?
No.
Tom Rankin?
Good evening. My name is Tom Rankin. I live at 184 Parkside. And you're exactly right that Planning and Zoning did make the right decision when they made the decision to deny this. And really, we're opposed. And there's several folks here that are in attendance that are not going to speak that are from the neighborhood. They might just acknowledge themselves by just raising your hand so you'll know that it's just more than just us that are speaking. We're against it really for primary two reasons. It is a residential neighborhood, and it would be setting a precedent to be allowed. You know, the lady spoke saying that it isn't a residential neighborhood, and flatly we disagree. It's a quiet, well-established residential neighborhood. True, there are two resorts there, Vickery Resort and Rockview Resort, that are grandfathered in that were probably built when the dam was built. Ever since then, it's been single-family residence. And it's a great neighborhood, and we'd like to keep it as such. And we're proud of our neighborhood. And when something like this were to go in, it would start eroding all that that neighborhood has been built on all these years. As far as setting a precedence, this is our sixth time in this hearing room fighting people trying to erode the residential neighborhood. In 08, as was mentioned, somebody was operating a nightly rentals. Planning and Zoning heard it, and it was denied. They appealed it, and that appeal was denied as well. Then they came and asked for the bed and breakfast, and it was denied and also denied on an appeal. Those were the right decisions. To deny this would also be the right decision. And we just thank you for your time tonight. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
When we do a special permit, then what's that entail as far as when they have to come underneath the health department then and the fire department and all that stuff on a special permit?
Basically, of course, it's a permit that's just issued to that applicant.
I'm sorry. What's the conversation?
Sorry.
I was asking if it's the special permitting or whatever the way it is, then wouldn't that put them where they would have to come underneath the regulations of the health department and fire department? And
I know even per the provisions here, they would have to be in compliance with the health department. And as far as the fire department, I'm not 100% certain, but my understanding is that it wouldn't. Now, I know what I recall as far as the fire department, I believe, isn't it duplexes or multifamily would basically fall under the fire department's regulations.
Okay, I'll close the public input, and for board consideration, I should point out that the denial for that 208 request was at Parkside and Parkview, which is the down about 8 or 10 houses on that corner there facing Parkview and Parkside Drive there. You've heard the comments. Any discussion? Would there be a motion that somebody would like to make?
I would move to deny the appeal.
I'll second it.
All right. Motion been made and seconded to deny the appeal. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Bob, you made the motion, and how do you vote?
Vote to deny.
Tom?
Vote to deny.
David?
Denied.
And the chairman likewise. So it is denied. However, there is the other recourse that you can go to the circuit court for a ruling from the judge on this one. Thank you. Our next case is 2011-0006A, a reconsideration of the decision record of
We can do 4 or 9 first.
Of the November meeting.
Oops.
And
sorry,
can you give us a staff report, Bob, as brief as you can?
Okay. Sorry about that. And this actually states it's of 9, but it in reality this should be a 4, and I apologize for that. I've that's an error. But yeah, this is case number 2011-006A, and this should actually state that it's a reconsideration of condition 4 of the decision of record of the Division 3 permit 2011-16. The applicant, the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, is seeking a reconsideration of the Board of Adjustment decision on condition number 4 in order to modify the specific condition placed by the Planning Commission on Division 3 permit 2011-16 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. Of course, the subject property is located east of the intersection of Thunderbird Road and U.S. Highway 65 in the Oliver Township, sections 8, 9, and 17, Township 21, Range 21. The background and site history on this, the subject property currently consists of approximately 809 acres that's currently containing an existing single-family residence and has served as a fully guided deer and elk hunting facility. On July 18th, 2011, the Taney County Planning Commission approved Division 3 Permit 2011-16, allowing the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex to operate a motorsports facility for automobile, motorcycle, and BMX bike racing, concerts, car or other trade shows, food, retail, commercial, public events, and faith-based and community gatherings. On November 16th of last year, the Board of Adjustment heard 5 separate appeal applications in which each of the applicants appealed the Planning Commission's decision to approve this Division 3 permit for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. The Board of Adjustment voted to deny each of these appeal applications by a unanimous vote of 4-0 with one abstention. The Board did not find beyond a reasonable doubt that there was an error of law that had been committed by the Taney County Planning Commission in the approval of this Division 3 permit. Sorry, I actually do have the wrong one here. Wow. December 21st, the Board of Adjustment heard a request from the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex requesting that the Board reconsider, and this should actually state condition number 4 of the decision of record. The Board of Adjustment voted to rehear both condition 4 and 9 by a unanimous vote of 4-0 with one abstention. The Board based its decision to reconsider based on new information that was provided. And I apologize. I think I may somehow I've actually confused these. Sorry about that. Let's see. I apologize. Somehow I've confused these. But the developer has basically submitted a conceptual development plan. In summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request seeking to modify condition number 4 placed by the Planning Commission on Division III permit 2011-16. Then condition number four would be modified to state the following. Prior to the issuance of certificates of conformance, the developer shall install all of the required infrastructure improvements specifically related to the issued Division II permits for which the developer is requesting a certificate of conformance. And the staff, we didn't put together a video on this just because each member of the Board of Adjustment has visited the site previously individually.
Okay, this is on the condition number four that was basically built, based upon the infrastructure being in at, for the entire project according to the P&Z report, and this is the reconsideration of that motion. Would those who are interested in speaking tonight please raise your stand and raise your hand? You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God. Thank you. Who's speaking on behalf of BSEC? And that would be Tom Gammon.
It's Tom Gammon. The original condition reads, prior to the issuance of certificates of conformance, the developer shall install all of the required infrastructure improvements. Our feeling in the hardship in the point of law is that the word all is too broad, and that the restriction needs to consider that there's a Division II process, and that it's a large development that will be built in phases, and that we'd be allowed to open like our offices prior to all infrastructure being in place, as long as we can support the building or buildings that we're wanting to get a certificate of compliance on. So our understanding is that every building we build on the property, we have to submit a permit application and go through a Division II process, whether it's the racetrack itself and the grandstands or our offices or the buildings we need to operate. In order for us to open a track, we have to be occupying our offices and planning months ahead of the actual opening of the facility. And timing-wise, some of the major highway improvements won't finish until just before track opening. Go to the next slide, Bob. If you look at this schedule, the racetrack right now, our opening is planned at March 2014. I can tell you that the highway improvements that we're looking at will finish at just about that time. But you can see there are several buildings on the property that would need to open prior to that. We would need to be able to get people in there. Central infield building, that's an operations center. The infield triage, we have to do testing on the track prior to an opening. So anytime there's live activity on the track, we have to have that infield care center in place and able to operate. The maintenance building, obviously there's a lot of equipment. We can't do outside storage, so that building takes care of our needs. And our offices, that's just a business, needs to be able to operate their offices. You can see we've done a short map. Mr. Stockdale did it for us. But you can see the operations buildings up here, ticket booths for early ticket sales once we get close to opening, and then the infield care. And our maintenance building is here. That may not be the final locations, but we're much like anybody else as projects evolve. But this is a preliminary plan. I think that's the last slide. their request for, you know, clearly defined, the language we're requesting will clearly define that under the Division II permit, we'd be allowed to receive certificates of compliance on each and every building and be able to document that we have the infrastructure in place to support that opening of the building.
Would it be safe to assume that this information that you presented to us tonight or at the last meeting that we met, you didn't present in the same fashion to the Planning and Zoning Board?
No, we did not.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Ganman?
Just out of curiosity, what's happening with the MoDOT interchanges?
We have quite a bit of work to do with MoDOT yet, and we've not really started that process. We'll get through a few things here, and then we'll start on MoDOT.
So we don't know if that's a go or not yet.
No, and we can't. You know, we're not going to build without them. So.
Okay. Fair.
Question? Anybody? Okay. Thank you, Tom. Eddie Coxey.
My name is Eddie Coxey. I live at 631 Fruit Farm Road. I've followed this particular event with quite a bit of interest and everything. But first of all, before we get started, guys, I want to thank you for the time you put in here, and thank you for hearing us. And it's a hard job. It's pretty clear cut when it comes to you, black and white. Somebody's appealing a decision that they were denied, and you have to say that they have the right to deny it. It gets really tough when somebody comes to you with a yes decision and appeals that because they were approved, but now you've got a yes decision. It doesn't change the way, in my opinion, the way you think and the way you approach it. I want to read you some articles out of the Taney County Code Book. I've given this a lot of thought. I've ran this over in my mind. I've talked to you in my vehicle several times. Trying to, you know, make sure that I'm clear on what I'm trying to say here tonight. But I want to read out of your Taney County Development Guidance Code, which is what the Planning and Zoning Board operates under, on page number 5. It states, the purpose of this book is to provide for the proper location and size of streets, buildings, building lines, open spaces, safety, recreation, and for the avoidance of congestion, including minimum width and area of lots and subdivisions if they come to that place. And then it says it is to conserve and to protect property and building values and to secure the most economical use of the land and to facilitate the adequate provision of public improvements. You read on down on page 27, it talks about land use compatibility. And it says these policies encourage land use compatibility, and because they assess several elements of compatibility for each proposed use, they will be more effective in doing so than a traditional zoning or ordinance that simply assumes that all uses permitted in the same district are automatically compatible. The phrase I really want you to look at, some of these policies require affirmative action to assure compatibility, such as the mitigation of potential nuisances, right out of the book. And then it says all off-site nuisances include dust, smoke, odor, noise, vibration, light, glare, heat, traffic, and it says potential off-site nuisances are encouraged to be mitigated, and this is on the western side, and it says where it cannot be demonstrated that off-site nuisances will be accepted and mitigated, the development generating the nuisance is discouraged. On the eastern side, it's an absolute policy,
Excuse me, Eddie.
Yes, sir.
Are you speaking directly to this?
Yes, sir, I am. I want to lay some groundwork here.
On number 4.
Yes, sir, this is number 4, okay. And also number 9, but I'm going to speak and then I'm going
to
be gone.
Sure. Okay. No, you don't have to be gone.
But basically, it says the final decision for land use compatibility will rest with the Planning and Commission, and then the appeals go forward. What I want to say is this, guys. This comes to you, it's very strange. They have an approval. They haven't tried to fix anything yet. They knew for months that they were coming through, and you had a board that heard for many, many hours what was going to go on here. When that board voted and said, it's split decision, 2 against, I think 3-4. They put all these conditions on this development because they knew what was going to happen. And that had sway on the other people that voted for this project. I believe some of your board members voted, if these guys will do what we're saying here, then they can be compatible. But we're going to have we're not going to have these issues like we've had with the air show, where the highway's all backed up and everything. We want this stuff in. That's why we're asking for it, because we'll have some kind of a small grand opening and we'll overwhelm the system. That's exactly what was going on. So the decision's not any different for you guys. And the neat thing about this is, now this is all open back up again, you don't have to stay with the decision you did last time. You can go back and say, we'll put it back to where it was. But guys, the decision's the same. Did planning and zoning err in their decision? You told the other five people that came and said, we don't think that should have approved it, that planning and zoning did right. Then these people come in and say, well, planning and zoning must have made a decision. And you say, well, maybe they did. But the fact of the matter is, they were within their purview to set these restrictions to make that compatible for this area. And the developer hasn't taken any chances, or hasn't really demonstrated any way that he's tried to mitigate any of the issues other than just get you to removal. That's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Eddie?
Yeah. Okay, Eddie, hang on.
Yes, sir.
As I understand what they're asking for is they want to put in, let's say, one road to get to one building.
Sure.
And once that building's in, they can have an office, and then they can bring all the luxury vehicles in and put it in the second building, which is their garage or shed. At each of those points, planning and zoning will have the opportunity to require additional infrastructure to be put in.
Yes, sir.
If that were to be approved, how or why would it be detrimental to anyone?
If I get you to approve me an infill where I could have my offices and everything like that, and then to drum up interest, I have a big event out there, barbecue, invite anybody wants to come. How does my existing infrastructure handle that? And planning and zoning would have no right, I don't believe at that particular time, since they signed off on the building, to say you can't do this out here.
But, I mean, if you're going to do that, you'd have to have special permitting or special...
No.
If you're going to have over X amount of people...
No, not if the project is approved for commercial use. I don't think I'm misspeaking, but your administrator's there. I'm just saying,
yeah.
What my premise is, you can do what you want, but what I'm saying is, when you start fiddling with the restrictions that planning and zoning put on there so that they could say this is compatible, you really start messing with the potential that these other guys would have voted differently. You'd be dealing with a no instead of a yes.
The wording in their decision, that the all infrastructure, is vague. How can we determine what the all is? What the permitting process will take care of itself when they come to us, when it comes to us in phases.
That this development presented to the planning board, they're all they wanted. And that's when the planning board said, for this all, we want all. They presented what was going to happen with the road. They presented what they thought they could do with the sewer. They presented the all, what the whole big program was. And they said, if you want to do the all and you want to open, do it all. It was pretty, I mean, they used the same word. It's there. Now, do I think maybe that was a little restrictive? I don't know. But the question, that's not the question. Did planning and zoning have the right to do that? That's the question. You can't reprimand it back to planning and zoning. But did planning and zoning do what they were supposed to do? Yes or no. If they did, you uphold planning and zoning. They go on to court. The court can reprimand it back to planning and zoning for clarification. Okay?
Got it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eddie.
Robert Stockdale.
Bob, can you pull back the language up from the stipulation four, please?
Yeah. We need quiet out in the audience, please.
I just want to read this, not to belabor it, but basically the word all is what as the board is recognized. All we're asking for is that the sequencing of the development, the sequencing of the infrastructure commensurate with the sequence of the amount of development. In other words, there's certain things that have to be in place, and the infrastructure that will support that initial development will occur in phase with that early development such that the whole project can come online in a logical, sequential way. I mean, to put in all these intersections, all this roadway, and all this everything for 20,000 fans or 25,000 fans is a much larger scope of work to complete for putting in an office building than you would for the entire track. So all we're asking is that the sequence of development and the sequence of infrastructure occur at the same pace. And the permitting process will monitor that and will take care of that in a logical and legal way. We're not asking for anything other than it's a hardship to execute in all the infrastructure initially for the certain structures that have to come online as much as a year ahead of the racetrack just so the project can move forward. We're not going to provide the infrastructure. We're just asking for it to occur in a logical, sequential way with the development. So, again, it's the word all is a little bit broad and nondescript in terms of how this normal development occurs. I mean, this is very normal. When shopping centers go in, you phase the parking lots with the amount of retail built. You add more retail, you add more parking. This is the kind of thing we're requesting in this application.
And you use the word as phasing in?
Phasing, yes. Meaning, the sequence of events.
I understand what it means. Right. I'm just likening it to the process of phases in a residential subdivision, because there are phases that you develop first and then you go on and develop other areas within that on a phase two, phase three, if you have that much of a project going.
Correct. It's like in that analogy, it would be like opening the sales office initially but not having all the roads in until the pace of the residential development warrants the roads to be put in, or the sewers in that case.
And how do you interpret the original intent? In what fashion do you see that as being all? What was your...
Well, the language, the way we read the language is that all the roads, all the sewers, all everything has to be in place before the first Division II permit can be released. And what we're saying is because the offices have to open up perhaps a year in advance of the racetrack itself, that would imply, the word all implies that all the infrastructure has to be in place for the entire development for just that single office building to obtain a Division II permit. And we see that as a hardship in terms of sequencing development in a normal, logical way.
Just need clarification on the all.
Correct.
Basically.
Right.
You don't want to put in all your landscaping and then do your foundation and put up a house.
Yeah. We agree to put in the infrastructure commensurate with the pace of the development. In other words, we put an office building in, we will provide the infrastructure to support that office building. If we put a maintenance building in first through a Division II permit, we would put the infrastructure in place to support both the office and the warehouse and the maintenance building. It would just be sequenced with the pace of the development activity.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Stockdale?
I would ask. As I look at this diagram that was included,
yes, sir.
You've seen that one?
Yes.
There's a secondary road that goes up past the airport.
Bob, can you put up that slide, please?
There you go.
The one to the south?
It's the one that's going up to 1 o'clock on it, if you looked at that as a clock.
Correct.
When would that go in?
I believe, am I correct in saying that would be in place prior to the first race of the first event, major event of the facility? First event of the facility, is that correct? Did you hear Tom?
No.
That road would be one of the first infrastructure improvements made prior to the opening of the racetrack. It would be in place for the racetrack.
It would be in place for the.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Stockdale. Tony Epsi.
My name is Tony Espy. And I'd just like to
Would you like to spell that last name for us? I'm sorry.
E-S-B-E-Y.
Thank you.
Okay, if you grant the SEC appeal on Condition 4, will this affect Condition 3 from the Taney County Commission? Condition 3 states that prior to the issuance of a certificate of conformance, the developer shall upgrade the existing transportation system and provide the necessary capability. So my question is, you know, if they do it in phases and stuff, but when it comes to the final day when there's a big race, they have to have everything done, all of the interchanges, the road to the airport, the sewers, and all this stuff before that can be done.
I believe so. Before race day, that all has to be done.
Okay. And then I just, the gentleman's just up here speaking before. I'm going to say they're going to do their office. Are they going to have the sewer treatment or the sewer lines in? Are they going to have water out there? Is this, again, up to planning and zoning? Decide if they can use that building as an office, unless that is in, because that's part of the infrastructure also.
That will be a condition, I'm sure, that is on the permit.
Okay. Then just a couple other points. In condition three.
I'm sorry, if I'm incorrect in that statement, Bob?
For each one of these structures, there'll be a requirement for a Division II permit. And along with that, there would be a requirement of a sign-off as far as the infrastructure, as far as the,
water
and sewer.
Water, power, fire. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
In condition three, it states that there has to be three new interchanges are to be built. Then we got the airport road that we talked about. And then conditions, remaining portions of the U.S. Highway 65 East Outer Road called MoDOT Long Range Transportation Plan. In a recent article in a newspaper, the developer states that there will be two interchanges. They said they've been working with the Missouri Department of Revenue, and that all they would need is to accommodate traffic during large events would be two interchanges. First, I'd like to see the traffic study in the minutes of those meetings in MoDOT to see why one of the interchanges was eliminated. Will Highway 65 be safe by eliminating that interchange and not cause traffic delays for residents? Second, when a developer presents their plans for approval with the planning and zoning, after the project is approved, can they change it whenever they want? With the appeals by the BSE, see, there has been several changes from the original presentation. Did the Planning and Zoning Commission go outside of their own conditions? Did they break the law or did they err in the law for these appeals to be heard? If you grant this appeal, tell me where Planning and Zoning failed or erred in law, because I can't see where they did. I know the word all has been used, but the planning and zoning, they came up with these conditions for the residents of our area, for the safety of the people on Highway 65. If you remember, before 65 was four-lane highway, the year before that, there were 8 fatalities between Hollister and the state line of Arkansas that one year. And then also Branson Creek was supposed to put an interchange in over there by Branson Creek in 65. That was never done. There was a fatality accident there about 4 months ago.
I believe they have to meet a certain volume of business or traffic to, and then they'll be required to put in an interchange. I believe that's the case out there.
Okay. But I just think 27,000 cars on a special day, that's terrible. If you think of Silver Dollar City with 8,000 cars, and if you guys went to the air show, you know what a mess that was. And living out there for all these years, I sure hate to go through that. Plus, I hate to see a fatal accident out there because of the racetrack traffic. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Any questions for Mr. Espy?
Espy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Stacy Whitfield.
Good evening. I'd like to read, first off, a couple of things that I found in the master plan for Taney County that, it's my understanding, was submitted to the state of Missouri. Oh, and I got that over. Oops. Taney County Master Plan, Land Use Residential Goal. Objective 1, protect the viability of existing neighborhoods and residential areas. The county's existing housing stock and neighborhoods represent a substantial investment of both public and private sector resources. Maintaining the integrity of existing residential areas is important to ensuring the availability of an adequate supply of housing for residents of Taney County and to promoting continued private sector economic investments in the county. Action 1, ensure that incompatible non-residential uses are not located adjacent to residential areas in order to maintain the viability of existing residential neighborhoods. Action 2, where land use conflicts between residential developments and non-residential uses are unavoidable, minimize conflict through buffering screening techniques and appropriate traffic controls that limit non-residential traffic movement through residential areas. Right now, you would not believe the traffic that comes down our street just looking for where this proposed racetrack is going to be. We're a small development of 11 houses with a cul-de-sac at the end. These people do not belong roaming our neighborhood. That right there, no infrastructure. Even they haven't even started. There's no infrastructure, and we're already having traffic in our neighborhood that doesn't belong there. When this board denied all the appeals against the racetrack, they kept saying, all I kept hearing is that P&Z didn't break any laws. Well, from the research I've done, they've broken no laws with these restrictions either. Come back up for that one.
You have a comment on this condition number 4?
Yes, I do. The infrastructure right there. I mean, there's not even infrastructure right now for people coming in search of where this might be. Imagine what happens when they put, okay, well, now we have an office building, and I'm going to go back to what Eddie Coxey says. They want to, you know, throw a party, which they've done. They tried to sway out the residents over at Oakmont. They want to throw a party. How much of that traffic is going to come into our neighborhood and into the existing neighborhoods down Fruit Farm? Over 200 residents are being exposed to this, and they want to now not put in infrastructure? I do not agree with that. Again, you guys told us that they broke no laws in 5 appeals where I proved to you that they did not follow the code. You said they broke no laws. I could not find a law that they broke here either in imposing these restrictions, making them have an infrastructure. What is wrong if you're going to put in a huge infrastructure? Why not put all your sewer in first anyways? It makes sense. I'd like to bring something up to you, if you don't mind. Is that okay?
As long as it has to do with this condition 4?
It has to do with all of it.
I'm sorry. We've got some time elements, and you've got 5 minutes.
I just have another saying, another thing I want to say that is in this. One thing. Yeah. Look at page 3. This property has a $5 million judgment against it. What is the point of approving or denying anything when Arvest Bank is holding the paper on this? Thank you.
Any questions?
How close or how far away is the nearest property? There's a pointer right there on the corner of the podium.
I'm shaking. I don't know if I can do it.
It's all right.
Right there is my property. I can't do
that. Yep. Okay, I got it.
To the north
right
of it.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right on the other side of the track that they don't talk about. The closest properties are probably ours. And that's where people are coming to see if they can see the racetrack.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, there's a half mile.
Any further questions? Brian Wade.
Good evening, gentlemen. Brian Wade, Springfield, Missouri. I am opposed to this board rewriting the conditions that were imposed by the Planning Commission in this case. And we'll discuss a little bit about why I think they had merit in what they did, but I don't think that's your issue tonight. I was a little surprised that we're down here again. I was surprised that you agreed to reconsider this because I don't know of any evidence, new evidence, that's been brought before you to suggest that you ought to reconsider this appeal. And, of course, your appeal issue is whether an error of law was made by the Planning Commission in this case. And, of course, it's the Planning Commission's obligation and duty to ferret through these issues and determine what is right and appropriate for any Division III permit that they issue. In this case, they sat through hours of testimony from both those supporting the racetrack and those opposed to it. And at the conclusion of that lengthy discussion, they made a decision to let the process go forward with certain conditions. And I heard earlier in some testimony that the suggestion was, well, this is like phasing, or this would be like building one part of a development and then allowing the rest of it to be built later. Of course, phasing isn't really appropriate here because there's only one racetrack. And either it is going to be there or it's not going to be there. So if the racetrack, there's not going to be two racetracks, there's not going to be three racetracks, like there would be a subdivision with different residential developments, which would require more roads or more of something else. There's just one. And they attached some documents to your packet, which they said they wanted to build a maintenance building, a first aid and triage building, office and store, an infield central building, first aid and triage, and ticket booths. Well, none of those are required unless there's a racetrack. You don't need a triage unless there's a racetrack. You don't need an office unless there's a racetrack. So you have to assume that the Planning Commission considered all those things when they made their condition, all infrastructure. And is that an onerous thing in this case, where you have to put your sewer in and your water in and build the roads necessary to support the infrastructure? Probably not. And in fact, the application they gave you indicates that they didn't think it was either, because they told you in the next page when they were going to do all those things. They were going to put sanitary sewer in starting in July of 12, storm sewer July 12, water system July 12. They were going to start the roads in February of 2012. Outer roads, February 2012. Highway 85 interchange, February 2012. Industrial Road interchange, February 2012. And a question was posed to Mr. Gannon. Hey, how you doing with MoDOT? How's that going? Well, we're not doing anything with MoDOT. Well, that's not what their plan said. That's not what their plan said they submitted to you. So it's not your job to go back and second-guess, armchair quarterback, determine whether the Planning Commission did the right thing in this case. Your job is to determine whether they made an error of law. And they didn't. They decided that they wanted the water and sewer and infrastructure to go in before the racetrack went in. And these buildings aren't necessary unless there's a racetrack. You received a letter today from a gentleman named Bill Morrow, and I got a copy of it by email. And he said that he was opposed. He owns the Branson Creek Golf Club, which is very near that development. He said he was opposed to the development, wish he'd come forward when it was considered, but he did say a couple of important things that we echo. He said that I was comforted in knowing, or I'm paraphrasing, I was comforted in knowing that the Planning Commission imposed conditions on this permit that would protect in some way the neighbors and my development, the golf course, and of course Big Cedar, from issues that we see like traffic and other things. And I think that stems from the fundamental issue that the Planning Commission had, which was this is an incompatible use. So these conditions were imposed to create some sort of compromise. And that's the compromise that they came up with based on their duties as Planning Commissioners. And I think all you can do is affirm that unless they made an error of law. And all is all, and it's not ambiguous in any way. And you would have to assume, for it to be ambiguous, you would have to assume the Planning Commission doesn't understand the Division II permitting process. And I don't think any of you believe that. I think you have to believe they know what the Division II permitting process is, and that they elected to impose a condition different than that. And so we'd ask you to deny this appeal. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Wade? Tammy Pasco.
I think it's being covered. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Voser. How do you spell the last name, Paul?
V-O-Z-A-R.
All right. Were you not at... Was not the first appeal we heard in November from you, and you elected to have your attorney speak for you at that time?
Yes, sir. Basically, I had a phone call and basically told me if I stood up, they were going to pretty well come after me on all this stuff. So, you know, we asked that we just kind of step back and let them do what they wanted.
And would you like to speak to this condition 4?
Yes, sir. You're talking about your infrastructure and everything out there, all right? None of these gentlemen, any of these people
please,
in this room,
address us.
None of these people in this room know anything about this project like I do. Infrastructure does not mean just sewer, water, and everything else. They're telling you they got 26,000 cars coming in out there. All right. On your infrastructure, you have to have nightly rentals to be able to house these people as they come in. Branson does not have it, so somebody has to build resorts. Branson has a lot of nightly rental units, but they also have a lot of timeshares. Timeshares don't matter. I've done a lot of research, 17 years on this project. These guys can't tell you nothing. They can't even really pronounce what the events are. Motorcycle racing. It's not called motorcycle. It's called motocross track. You know, there's a lot of stuff in this project that has to be done before this even takes off. Like they were all saying, Eddie, everybody, you got to have roads, sewer, all that in. They've already got an office out there. I got pictures of their offices on the inside, their buildings and everything else. They need an office. They already got one there. Main thing is they got to put the roads in. Sewer, water. All right, back to the second part. Infrastructure for people to be able to stay there. They don't have it. Branson does not have it. If we got other stuff going on in Branson, there's nowhere for these people to stay. They're not going to stay in these little motels. You have to have infrastructure. All right? MoDOT. MoDOT has already said they are not financing anything to do with the overpasses. I have a letter of it. Tammy, other people in here have letters from them that says they are not going to finance it at this moment. They have not had anything presented to them. Last one that was presented to them was in, I think, 2003 or something like that, when Russell actually tried this before. Why did y'all turn them down before? Can y'all answer that? I don't think so. The reason you turned them down before was because of the housing and stuff, the people around there. So what has changed between then and now, when there's more out there? You got the new airport out there. You got all them people that live out there now. So what's the difference between now and then, except there's more houses out there? You know, nobody's listening to what the public of the people that live around there. You know, infrastructure has to be done before anything. And second, he's still got to go through court with me, with the injunction, the lawsuits, everything else. He has no more money. He's being sued left and right, losing cases left and right. So how can you approve something to move forward when it's not there? The money's not there. Have they showed you where the money's coming from? Really, have they?
That
no.
has no bearing on what we're talking
about. Well, it doesn't
about.
Matter. This is still about the whole project. It's not his. Everything in here that you just read, you see all the documents and everything. These gentlemen did not have a clue on how to build this project until they met me. I sat in there with Russell, Craig, Ahia, all these guys, Robert Stocksdale, got a signed confidentiality agreement right here with his name on it. So, listen, basically, you got a lot of infrastructure that's got to be done. You got to have highways in there. 26,000 cars ain't all that's going to be in there just for that event. You got other people that's going to be strolling around through there, driving around, looking at everything. Then, after the event, who's going to be out there checking all the vehicles when these guys are leaving polluted? Do you want them to leave that track drunker and crap, come out there and hit somebody? Yeah, whose fault's that? Who's going to do the infrastructure? And that's about all I got to say. You know, I try to be quiet. But when you got guys sitting here screwing up one of the best projects in the world that I completely done over 17 years, got my money in it, not them. They've been on this for 3 years. They're sitting there trying to pitch my pitch, and they suck at it. You got to have some infrastructure done first, gentlemen. And you cannot override that. So you need to table this whole thing until the infrastructure's done, until the lawsuits and the injunctions are done. And that's all I got to say. And I appreciate y'all's time and everybody else's. But it needed to be said.
Thank you very much.
I am the owner of this project. It's not them. They have not got a clue. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Bozak?
Bring them. I'm ready. I can tell you anything about the infrastructure.
Thank you very much.
Right, that's what I thought. Thank y'all.
Copper glass.
Gentlemen, my name is Topper Glass. I'm an attorney for Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. Very briefly, phasing is appropriate. If you adopted the philosophy suggested by my friend Mr. Wade, you wouldn't approve any regular subdivision. Phasing has been appropriate for years and obviously should continue to be. The suggestion, as I hear some of this, is that you wouldn't be authorized under the law to make the slightest minor correction in any order or ruling. And that is not the law in the guidelines or the statutes, nor would it be good policy. It seems to me we're just rehashing a lot of the things that have been considered here before. And we urge the adoption of the correction in the language as stated in the summary. Thank you.
Thank you. John R. Is it Jackal? Any further questions of anyone? Mr. Gammon, would you like to speak for?
Absolutely. I'd like to summarize a little bit.
I really wanted you to know if you had any rebuttal on what
that's
anybody
what I,
had
that's
said.
Where I was at.
All right.
One, we're not asking to not have to build infrastructure. We're solely asking to build infrastructure commensurate with what we intend to occupy at that moment. We're not going to open up a racetrack without the proper infrastructure to support the fans, to move the traffic in and out. I'd like to point out that the process, and they keep going back to MoDOT, the process is once we know here what we've got, then we can complete our traffic study and then go to MoDOT and begin negotiations with MoDOT. There's a lot of this and that and questions about us, and they don't understand where we're at. They don't understand the process. The one thing I would like to point out in the Taney County master plan that certain people keep referring to. It says highway and freestanding commercial, that these commercial activities typically locate along major transportation routes. That's exactly what we're doing. And we're creating a transportation corridor over to the airport. There is no more compatible location in Taney County for this built for this track than between Highway 65, the train track, and the airport. If you look also in the master plan, it states under commercial use in Chapter 7 that commercial development is most pronounced in western townships along Highway 65 south of Hollister. That's exactly where we're at. I think the real point is that we're not asking not to build infrastructure. We're only asking to be able to open offices or smaller businesses that might be out there with us. You know, at this point, we don't know everything that will be there. And we're asking to open those things as needed rather than having to wait to open anything until the whole project is completed. That's all this request is. It's not build infrastructure. It's not build interchanges. We will build every interchange that the traffic studies tell us we have to do. And that negotiation will be done between MoDOT and Taney County Road and Bridge and us in planning and zoning. That's simply all we're asking for. The sewer, we have to deal with the sewer board. There's processes for all of this.
On the track itself, do you plan on building the entire stadiums to accommodate 65,000 fans?
We won't open with that many fans. We wanted the land use. You know, planning and zoning is land use authority or the right to develop. So we will open with a much smaller footprint You know, it's going to take us time to build up the racing to the level we think we could build to.
What would the initial
guessing it could be between 25 and 40,000 seats.
Originally.
Okay. And I'm not sure which, because there's a lot of things that are going to affect that decision.
And any comment on the second intersection?
There, we have two intersections that we're looking at right now. The traffic study is going to tell us how many intersections we need, and we will satisfy everyone that we, you know, MoDOT, Taney County Road and Bridge, and law enforcement that we can handle the traffic. The traffic engineers will say that. We don't just turn in a traffic plan to MoDOT. MoDOT takes our traffic plan, they review it, they do their own study on it. They don't just say, okay, good. You know, there's a whole process. But that we can't go down that process till we know what we can build.
Okay. Anybody else have questions?
Yeah.
Bob?
Did you say you were going to start out with 35 to 40,000 seats?
25 to
40,000. 25. All right. Okay. Also, we've been talking about an office and some maintenance buildings. Now, all of a sudden, I heard you mention something about new businesses. Why hasn't this ever been mentioned before?
We did mention it before. We did mention it in the previous hearing. You know, that's just one of the things. To Mr. Wade's contention that what changes, you know, I've been involved in development for a long time and building for a long time, and I have never been part of a project that didn't evolve and change. Through the course of the project. They all evolve, and they evolve from the initial land use permission to opening day, and then they evolve after that. I worked on, I was the superintendent for Big Cedar Lodge, for the general contractor that built Big Cedar Lodge when Big Cedar Lodge was built. And I can tell you, where we started out down there isn't anything like what's there today. And when we started out down there, it was nothing like it was in 1988 when we opened the project. It changed the whole time. Every one of these projects will change. Look at any project around here and tell me it hasn't changed. They all change. All large commercial projects have changes inherent in the process.
Any further question?
No. Have a comment on that.
Okay. Hearing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll close the public input at this time unless the board members have any questions for anybody. Bob, you had a comment?
It's been said that infrastructure can be phased in. I worked for a developer in central Iowa that owns the largest real estate firm in the state and was one of the largest developers. He developed a place called Glen Oaks. Some of you have seen it on television because the Alliance Senior Golf Tournaments have been held on that course. Before the first home was built, all of the infrastructure was in. And we're talking about residences for about 500 units. Now, I know it can be done. I know it. It was done because they had a solid plan. Now, yes, they did make some changes. They were going to put in two twin towers, which they found were not logical after they got into the project. And that area was redesigned. But all of the infrastructure was there before the first foundation was dug.
Can I,
David?
I've known projects that have been ran the same way, where everything is in. A couple subdivisions back where I come from, that's the way we did it. That doesn't mean that that is the only way to do it. That doesn't mean that that's the way it has to be done. A phasing in on a development of this size, it will all take care of itself. As they build, the permits will be issued, and all the infrastructure will be in. And by the time that opens, everything will be in. And so that's just...
Okay. What happens if we get down to the point where the track is in and we're starting to build some grandstand seating, and ODOT says no to the interchanges?
They'll say no to finance it. They might say no to finance it, but they're not going to say no to build it.
Well, what guarantee do we have at all that it's going to be, or that there are going to be interchanges there? See, if that interchange has to be there, along with the roads up to the airport and sewer and water and the basic electric. I know you can't run wire to something that doesn't exist. But if that's not there, what guarantee is there that we're not going to get down the road and something is not approvable and we say, oh, wait a minute, we've got so much invested in this.
Let's go the other way then for just a second. All the infrastructure's in. We have overpasses. Okay. We have everything done. I don't know what, something just major happened, catastrophe happens, boom, the project runs out of money, or something just terrible happens. Now we've got all this infrastructure on bare ground.
But the improvements to the land are there for future development. Your water, your sewer, you've got roads in there that are usable. If you go the other direction, you have a track that's going to bring in how many thousand people, and you don't have the road or the intersection to support it.
We're just going to butt heads.
No, I know, but
we don't have to butt heads. We just
no,
need
but
to
these
be
are.
Rational.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand, and I understand your concerns completely, very, very valid. But I'm of the feeling that the phasing in is going to take care of all the concerns that you have as far as we want to build our and they do have a barn out there, I believe, now that they have some of their offices in that they're doing business in, we saw. Okay, they want to build a new maintenance shed or how their schedule is broke down.
So you say you can't open that without all the infrastructure and sewer lines and things being...
Yeah, but they can open those buildings now.
No, because all the infrastructure has to be in. We need the overpasses and everything for them to build an office building. That's the way it says right now.
But see, those interchanges are vital to the flow of traffic, to the... let's say
track.
Peace in the neighborhood for traffic, lack of congestion. Because I could see, one road in, one road out right now, just ain't going to meet it.
For an office building, do you need a four-lane highway?
No, not for the office building. But I'm
now when they're getting down to the track, they're going to have that infrastructure in. When they get to that phase, they're going to have the roads in to handle the traffic for that phase.
Okay, but one more all right.
Anyway, I'm done.
Yeah, okay.
One thing I did want to throw out there, at the time that the staff proposed this condition, it was written prior to the issuance of certificates of a conformance, and it was written as a plural, thinking that basically they would have to obtain individual Division 2 permits, with each of those Division 2 permits having to obtain a certificate of conformance, and we wanted to ensure that the appropriate infrastructure was in place for each of those individual CFCs.
So that the all can be read two different ways there, with the plural on the CNCs.
That was my initial thought, was that each Division 2 permit was going to require a CFC, essentially.
So then before they lay the loop for the track, the interchanges are going to be approved.
I don't know that.
Well, see, that to
me
is...
No, before that they can open the track...
They have to be there.
They would have to be there.
We would have to have a sign-off
for
MoDOT, basically, indicating that the required infrastructure for... That MoDOT and the road.
I mean, if P&Z, when they approve the whatever phase you want to put it in, phase 4, phase 20, requires them to, before one race car can race on the track or any amount of people can be on the racetrack, that interchanges and all infrastructure as far as highways and that has to be in place before they can get a CFC.
Then my question is, what happens if it's not approved? Yep. I mean, how do we manage that? Because what we say now is going to influence
it's
that.
It's shake of the dice in any way you want to.
I can answer that.
But do we go from the conservative, or do we just kind of... I'm asking the question.
I have nothing further to say.
I've been doing this all my life, and I've went to different ones that I've put all the infrastructure in, and then I went through it where we've run phases for 4 years, 5 years of different, 900 or $1 billion Procter & Gamble job over in Cape Girardeau. It was phases and phases of, of different things. So... Either one is not an improper one.
Yeah. Well, I agree. It can be done in either manner. I'm just concerned that in this particular case, that what's there will support the next step.
It's going to have to in order to get signed off for the next step.
Okay.
I mean, I read it like Bob does, as far as...
Which Bob?
Bob. My right-hand Bob. Right Bob, left Bob. that all, I mean, in each divisional permitting, that all the infrastructure would be in place to support that.
Okay.
Okay, are we need any more discussion? Bobby, as you recall, of course, we were not at that P&Z meeting. You were. So that information you provided is well and taken.
I'm going to make a motion to amend the decision of record on number 4 to build this project in phases and get permits as needed upon approval for the phases. Please.
Infrastructuring should be...
Infrastructure should be... It's hard one word. Go ahead. Help me out on the wording.
Well, I don't know.
Being as vague as the original?
I'm trying not to be.
Yeah, I know.
I'm trying not to be. That's what I'm trying to avoid. Okay. This... Prior to the issuance of certificates of conformance, CFC as the developer shall install all of the required infrastructure improvements specifically related to the issued Division 2 permits for which the developer is requesting a certificate of conformance.
Bob, how does that differ from what the P&Z just said?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
My honest feel was that was the intent. The developer felt that it wasn't clarified, but that's what I felt the intent was with the plural of certificates of conformance. I always felt that the intent was for the appropriate infrastructure to be in place to allow for the a certificate of conformance to be issued for each Division 2 permit.
Okay, so...
Okay. Wait, here's the...
But the developer essentially is seeking to clarify that.
Let me ask a question then, David. Are you in favor of what P&Z approved on their initial
question,
condition?
This is where my question comes in to Mr. Atchley. If we do nothing on this, no motions made, then does that then
is
does that allow how is the permitting process going to work? How is the infrastructure going to work if we do nothing?
I'm sorry.
Okay. We are going to do something.
Well, I don't want to. Okay. No, that's not what I meant. Nothing. All right. I didn't mean that. No. brain hurts.
I guess the way I would put it is the way I would look at the current condition, and I believe the intent at the time that the staff proposed the initial condition was that the appropriate infrastructure, all of the appropriate infrastructure, be in place prior to the issuance of each certificate of conformance or CFC for each Division 2 permit. And
we need to put the eaches in
here. Yeah, so then that's... And so that's what my motion has to reflect.
Are we changing anything from what P&Z had in there originally? It was my question. Yeah.
Verbiage? Is that all we're changing? Is verbiage?
No, I'm just wondering. Are we making something
prior to each
that is different than what P&Z has already said?
Prior to each.
Okay. And
certificate of performance. The developer shall install. Okay. All the infrastructure is required.
Huh. I need clarification on the wording of that, if it's a motion.
Okay.
Motion made to amend the decision of record to build the project in phases and obtain permits as needed for each phase, and infrastructure should be in place before each for each phase.
That's kind of what I said, but you said it better.
Okay. I have the motion made then. Is there a second to that motion?
Could you read that again one more time, please?
To amend the decision of record to build the project in phases and obtain permits as needed for each phase, and infrastructure should be in place for each phase.
Shall be in place.
I'll second it.
Okay, motion been made and seconded. Discussion?
Does it read right now, prior to the issuance of certificates of conformance, the developer shall install all of the required infrastructure improvements? That is the complete number four. What would happen if we left this and just said, as required by planning and zoning? Would that clarify it?
I don't think it needs planning and zoning on there. That's a, that's a kind of a mute question. PNC is going to have to answer anyway.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking, because this is what's here, are we trying to rewrite or do too much rewriting? I don't know. I throw it out.
Well, one of the reasons we're here, we did not have a majority of three votes to approve it the first time around. That's really the issue that brought it back here, with the acknowledged that we had some additional information that the developer wanted to bring in us that was not available at that time. So that's where we're here. And so it was not unanimous, and that's why it's failed. Okay. I'll call for the vote then.
Before I call for the vote,
yes.
Would you please read it one more time for me?
Amend the decision of record to build the project in phases and obtain permits as needed for each phase. Infrastructure shall be in place for each phase.
Okay. Word phase bothers me, but that's, I understand. Okay.
Then what does this say?
In here, all infrastructure prior to the issuance of certificates of conformance.
Are we saying the same
thing?
And
what I, you know, to clarify it, to say that it, you know, who it goes back to for the decision.
Well, that's a perfect
maybe that's what we're saying. We're trying to say here that's
throwing it back at planning and zoning to to issue the permits and the infrastructure permitting and stuff required on each phase that they propose to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you don't have to get approval for each phase.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Satisfied. I'll call for the vote then. David, you made the motion.
Four.
Tom?
Four.
Bob?
Four.
Chairman votes negative. But you do have a three favorable votes with that specific wording.
I'd like to make a motion for a 5-minute recess.
Let us recess for 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman,
my brain hurts.
Can I make a comment?
You can make it to me, yeah.
When they readjourn, we have the background noise eliminated a little more so that we can understand what you folks are actually talking about up here.
back here, we can't hear anything because of some of this background noise.
I apologize for that. Thank you.
back on.
In their attentiveness, but there has been a request that because of the background noise, we cannot be heard by those in the back of the room. So if you could keep your comments until the meeting is over, appreciate it. Next on the agenda is reconsideration request for condition number 9.
And as you said, this is case number 2011-0006A. This is a reconsideration of condition 9 of the decision of record of Division 3 permit 1116. The applicant is the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. The applicant, the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, is seeking a reconsideration of the Board of Adjustment decision on condition number 9 in order to modify the specific condition placed by the Planning Commission on Division 3 Permit 2011-16 for the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex. Of course, the subject property is located at Thunderbird Road and U.S. Highway 65. The background on this, the subject property, of course, consists of the 809 acres, which currently contains the single-family residence and has served as a fully guided deer and elk hunting facility. On November 16th, the Board of Adjustment heard 5 separate appeal applications, and the Board of Adjustment voted to deny each of these appeal applications by a unanimous vote of 4-0 with one abstention. The Board did not find beyond a reasonable doubt that there was an error of law that had been committed by the Taney County Planning Commission in the approval of this Division 3 permit. On November 16th, the Board of Adjustment also heard an appeal application from the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex seeking to modify specific conditions. At that hearing, the Board of Adjustment did vote to modify conditions number 7, 8, and 10 of the Division 3 permit, but however did deny the request at that time to modify conditions number 4 and 9. On December 21st, the Board of Adjustment did vote upon being presented new evidence in the form of a sound study that it was felt that the applicant had demonstrated that substantial injustice would result as a refusal to grant a reconsideration request, and the Board did direct the administrator at that time to put out the appropriate notices. In review, the applicant, the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, is seeking to modify condition number 9 placed by the Planning Commission on this Division 3 permit. Condition number 9 currently states that decibel readings at any of the four measuring stations shall not exceed a sound pressure level of 68 decibels. The certificate of compliance shall be suspended for any readings exceeding 68 decibels. A written notice of suspension shall be served upon the owner or operator of the development, requiring that the development return to compliance within 60 calendar days or be revoked. The certificate of compliance shall be revoked for any readings exceeding 68 decibels within the 60-day noncompliance period. A fine of $5,000 shall be levied per each offense over 68 decibels. The applicant is requesting that the language for condition number 9 be modified to state that decibel readings at three of the four measuring stations shall not exceed a sound pressure level of LEQ 77 dBA and an L max of 83 dBA for motorsports and concert noise within half a mile of the event location. Noise emitted by other sources, i.e. thunder, aircraft, fireworks, and other off-site influences, shall be exempt. Taney County, upon the receipt of a report indicating that the set levels have been exceeded, shall issue a notice of violation to the owner/operator. The owner/operator shall have 60 days to present to the Taney County a report identifying the cause and noise mitigation options to alleviate the reoccurrence. The applicant, as was stated, did submit an additional sound study, which, from my understanding, was prepared in December of 2011 as basically new evidence. As one thing I did want to bring up, too, is, as was stated earlier, condition number 8 was previously modified, and this modified condition now also does require the creation of a mutual agreement between Taney County and the Branson Sports Entertainment Complex, which would establish the specific criteria for the testing and monitoring of these sound pressure levels. And basically, I've just included a copy of each of the sound studies. What's been submitted is basically a base map, a sound study for what the sound levels would be with 5 cars, 10 cars, 25 cars, 33 cars, and basically the 43 car max, and then also what we would see during a concert event. And basically, in summary, if the Taney County Board of Adjustment approves this appeal request, condition number 9 would be modified to state the following: that the decibel readings at three of the four measuring stations shall not exceed a sound pressure level of LEQ 77 dBA and an L max of 83 dBA for motorsports and concert noise within a half mile of the event location. Noise emitted by other sources, i.e. thunder, aircraft, fireworks, and other off-site influences, shall be exempt. And Taney County, upon the receipt of a report indicating that the set levels have been exceeded, shall issue a notice of violation to the owner/operator. The owner/operator shall have 60 days to present to Taney County a report identifying the cause and noise mitigation options to alleviate the reoccurrence.
Comment before we proceed any further. Can you tell us how the 68 decibels were arrived at on the recommendation by the P&Z?
The 68 decibels were originally arrived at based on the study that had been conducted previously by a staff member at another racetrack facility. It's my understanding that they took actual readings at a facility in Joplin, and at a half mile, those readings were approximately 68 decibels.
Was the topography similar?
I believe there was a great difference in topography between the two tracks. I think that area is relatively flat.
Okay.
And And so that's where the initial number came from. And then once an initial sound study was submitted by the applicant, the Planning Commission felt that 68 decibels fell at the low end of the decibel range that was submitted.
One more question, David.
Was the person who did the study for the county, the ones in Joplin, were they licensed, trained, or?
Well, the actual study that was completed in Joplin, actually the report that was completed by a staff member, but he actually basically quoted a study that had been completed in Joplin. I'll be honest, I don't know a great deal about the qualifications of the person that completed that study.
I know that some of these names on here have been sworn in before, but since this is a different condition, I'd like to re-swear you in for this portion. Would those like to stand and raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear to tell that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. Mr. Gammon?
Well, these months I won't be here. So. Bobby, you got there going. First, thanks for your time tonight. And I know some of these decisions are very hard, and your time preparing for this. The reconsideration of condition number 9, in order for 68 decibels to be measured, it has to be a defined scale. And one of the errors is there is no defined scale. Decibels are in scales A or C. A is the range of human hearing. C is all noise. To say 68 decibels is to say the temperature is 28 degrees. We don't know if that's Fahrenheit or centigrade. 68 decibels, you don't know which scale you're talking about. So you can't hold someone to, if you're going to measure temperature in a scientific experiment, you need to know if you're using a Fahrenheit thermometer, a centigrade thermometer, or a Kelvin thermometer. Next slide, Bob. we believe that the commission erred, and the reason we believe that is that the number of cars, and if you look at the Emery Creek Ranch sound study that Mr. Crawford did, it states that he took his measurements at the Joplin Speedway with 6 bomber cars on the track. Now, I've been very conservative in my horsepower estimate. If those cars had 400 horsepower, they'd be lucky, but we said 500. At 9, and then Emery Creek, their closest neighbor is 900 feet. Our closest neighbor is 2,334 feet from the track. On the main track, 43 cars at 800 horsepower. All of our sound studies are done at that level. That's top competitive level cars. It's the top number of cars you can get on the track during the race, and it's the top range of horsepower. So the difference is, one of the things we wanted to point out is that the Planning Commission approved Emery Creek at 83 decibels for 6 cars on a track at 900 feet closer. In our case, a larger facility, 43 cars, more horsepower, and their neighbors are further away. Next slide. So approval of the reconsideration request will define a scale of measure, define peak and average over times, and define the parameters of compliance enforcement. Next slide. If you look at this slide, 70 decibels is a passenger car passing you in your front yard at 25 feet away, at 25 miles an hour. If Lowe's is delivering a new washer and dryer to the neighborhood, and they pass you in your front yard at 25 feet, it's 80 decibels or 80 dBA at 25 feet at 25 miles an hour. So that's the main level we're going to talk about here. All of our, what we're going to present is everything that's 70 decibels or 70 dBA and above. For instance, a 747 is 120 decibels at 30 feet, and a rock band, John, that was at 100 feet, is 110 dBA. So next slide, Bob. The other thing we wanted to point out is that, and we've done quite a bit of work on schedule. We've been able to work on our event schedule in the last few months. So we would have 32 event days during the year where we would be in the 70 to 75 decibel range, a half a mile from the track. That's a four-hour period that you would have that would occur within that four-hour period. When a race, when you get a caution flag, the decibels go down. The peak decibels are when this race starts, when the cars are all packed up. As they spread out, it lowers down. So you don't have the high decibel levels for the whole four-hour period, but you have it on and off during the four-hour period. The 75 to 80 decibel level, that would be our main touring pro events. 14 event days of the year. That's not 14 events. That's 14 total days in a year that level noise would occur. And all of that would occur within about a five-hour period. Again, you've got driver introductions. You've got the race that starts. Then you've got cautions, starts and stops. And as the cars get spread out, the decibel readings will go away. That's all within about 5 hours. And that's total hours are 3.6% of the year. So we're not talking every day. We're not talking every weekend. We're not talking, morning, noon, and night. It's concentrated in short durations and in not a ton of days during the year. Next slide. If you look at this slide, this is 25 cars on the track at the elevation it's at. If you look, you notice that the loudest area is this 70 to 75 decibel area here. That's a high faces along the ridge. It does not spread out way back out around the track. We intentionally built this track low to mitigate noise, and I'll show you another slide later on that shows that, and there's one in your package that shows it. Next slide. This is 43 cars on the track. And you see this, that's the peak events of the year, 43 cars on the track. You can see the 75 to 80 decibel band right here. And then this is the 70 to 75 decibel band on the track. And this line actually is from the edge of the track, not the center of the track. Next slide. Eight events. When we first made the decision on where to build the track and the level of the track, we had several meetings back in February on the exact location of the track and the elevation of the track. We had another site up here, up in this area, that we could have built the track in that fit very well. We chose the lower bowl, and part of the reason for that decision was noise mitigation. All along we've said we want to be a good neighbor. If you look at the bands that come out, I'm not going to harass my opponents, and I wish they wouldn't harass me. If you look at the noise bands, it spreads out much, much wider. So our point in showing this slide is, and presenting this information, is we've already gone to great lengths to mitigate the noise in the track. Bob, if you'd back up one slide, please. We will undertake studies on what we can do to mitigate over here to help block some of this sound coming out. But until we are further in design, I can't tell you we could be successful or not. We will deal on our issues on a case-by-case basis. Our plans show the road course over here. That's our current opinion of the road course. The road course is not designed yet, and we're not sure that's where it's going to go. That valley works real well. There's another location, and we wanted to show the road course in the very first phase of development in the 800 acres. There's some more stuff to come later.
Tom, while we're on that slide, can you tell us or show us where your monitoring stations were for you to arrive at these sound levels?
I'll have to have Mr. Jekyll, John Jekyll, my engineer, answer that.
We'll wait until
he can go through these slides with you.
Okay.
I understand what they say. He understands how they got to where to what they say. This is a concert. Bob, you had asked about concert noise. So I had John do concert noise study and slide, and this is from actual event data that he took at a concert, and it's placed into our property. So you can see the concert noise. Again, we run up in this ridge line with the higher noise level, but you can see the noise level, the high concentrated noise level is down low, except there's a 60 to 70 range up in here on
is that
in this
DBA?
Part. DBA. All of these are DBA.
Okay.
All of these are LEQ DBA.
Okay.
Okay. Next slide. Essentially what we're asking for is that three of the four monitoring stations shall receive a sound pressure level of 77 dBA or an LMAX of 83 dBA, or shall be limited. Let me read that again. Decibel readings. Three of the four monitoring stations shall not exceed a sound pressure level of an LEQ 77 dBA and an LMAX of 83 dBA for motorsports or concert noise within 1/2 mile of the event location. The half mile would be where the monitoring stations are at. Noise emitted by other sources, thunder, I can't control thunder. Aircraft, I can't control the aircraft at the airport. Or someone flying over. I can't control fireworks that neighbors would shoot off across the road from us. Or other off-site influences. I have no ability to control those noises. The way the current regulation is written, it's any reading. Any reading. That leaves me open to anybody that wants to do anything around me can blame me for their noise. Taney County, upon receipt of the of a report exceeding the set levels, shall issue a notice of violation to owner and operator. The owner and operator shall have 60 days to present to the county a report identifying the cause and the noise mitigation options to alleviate the recurrence. The analyzation takes a long time. John has been working on this study since last spring, and you're now seeing full results of it. So you can see it takes a long time to build the models, put the data in the models, and generate what a reasonable prediction of what will happen with noise. I will tell you that all of these are meteorologically neutral. That means there's no wind figured in. There's no low cloud deck. There's no thermal inversion. There are things in the environment that can change these readings 5 dB in any direction, and that's what John tells me. So, he can speak more to you on that if you want to ask him questions about that. again, I think our major points are it's interesting that the Mr. Coxey got up here and spoke that the racetrack he was the plant administrator on was approved for 83 DBA. It's also interesting that Mr. Wade represented that developer. It seems to me that the 68 decibels is arrived at almost arbitrarily. There's a number that for another racetrack without full study of what this racetrack was and what it could present. And we respectfully request that this condition be changed. The hardship, the undue hardship on us is that we would be faced with a restriction that we don't even understand. We don't know what 68 decibels mean. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, I think we do have. Bob, any questions right off hand?
Not yet.
Okay. I have a question. There are some elements of the motion or that was presented that is eliminated at this, and that I'm referring to the $5,000 fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that sentence entirely is out of there from the PNZ report, and it's not shown anywhere there. What is your response to that?
We're not opposed to a voluntary $5,000 fine. And that's the same thing that the Emery Creek proposal had in it. And I believe Mr. Wade eloquently argued at that hearing that it was a voluntary fine, that they surrendered their constitutional right to allow that to happen. We're not opposed to that. I didn't put it in here because it was changing specific language. But we would definitely be open to that. We would hope that if there is a fine that it could go to like Hollister Schools or Hollister School Athletic Program, something that's near and dear to Mr. Cook's heart.
Okay, so you're talking about voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding that we have no legal right to impose a fine. Because that's not an option up to the planning and zoning. And the enforcement of that, if it's not enforceable, because the fine can't be levied in the first place, but there's nothing that says otherwise if it's voluntary.
That's right.
Okay.
And I'm not an attorney, so I didn't address that in point of law.
We asked our board attorney to give us a written or a verbal opinion. It was his opinion, not written, but verbal, that the county did not have a right to him, or the planning and zoning did not have a right to impose a fine. I think presented to PNZ on July the 18th was a report from HNTB also.
Yes.
And there is a sound.
The very pointer
on the back page, mm-hmm, of this report. Was this available for them to consider?
It was available that day, and we could not get that produced any quicker than that day. So it was the day of the hearing.
And if I could, just to clarify along these lines, the 68 decibels was initially obtained from this Emery Creek study in concert with basically the study that was provided.
Okay.
The day of the Planning Commission vote, basically. It was felt that was a comparable number, essentially.
Questions?
Tom? Just on.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Stockdale.
Nothing to ask the board.
Tony Espy.
Well, a lot of my comments were answered, but again, why a condition 9? How did the planning and zoning, what was the, I'm quite here, what error did they make? Tom Gannon said there's an error that they made.
The only comment on that was that the decibels was not delineated as for what scale it was used from.
Okay. Well, when I filed my appeal some months back, I was told that I'd have to have planning and zoning made an error. And I just wondered, with new evidence to be allowed BSEC to appeal condition number 9, what error did planning and zoning make?
They don't have a definable scale to be measured on the 68 decibels.
Okay. I like the comment on that. There's an A scale and a C scale. I noticed that they're all using the A scale on their reports. I talked with a sound person. I'm not a sound expert, so this is a graph. If you'd like to have a copy of it, I have it here. What it does, it presents an A scale, starts down here. Your C scale is more of a horizontal line across. Get my notes back here. Okay, referring to the graph showing the A and C scale, the A scale filters out sound below 500 Hz at about 12 dB octave. The C scale has essentially a flat frequency response. This could make a 50 dB difference between the A and the C at this point right here. The racetrack will generate most of the sound energy noise below the 500 Hz, that's in this area from here to here, which is filtered out by the A scale. So I feel that the C scale should be used and not the A. A levy of fines. I know planning and zoning, you said the attorney says planning and zoning has no authority for fines and this. I think planning and zoning meant was that it was up to Taney County to do the fines. It wasn't planning and zoning to do it. I could be wrong on that, but
my understanding is that there has to be an ordinance established by the commission, and we have no ordinance at this time.
Okay.
OSHA does not have any requirements. EPA does not have any requirements either.
Okay. And then there's a lot of talking about the track with the sound level. Nothing is mentioned about the motocross track, which is going to be closer to residents. I know that they just commented today that they don't know exactly where it's going to go. But are these restrictions going to be the same on the motocross track? Or is that going to be another set of restrictions that they have to come up with? Because they are going to be closer. If the original plans that I saw for the motocross, they were going to be right there by Whitfield Drive. And those houses are like 600 feet from that track. So I'm just curious on that, how is that going to be handled, those sounds, even though they have not been discussed. That's all the comments I have.
All right. Good comments. Any questions back?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. You're proposing that we use the C scale.
Yes, sir.
Are you aware that most municipalities measuring sound use the A scale?
I was told that the A scale is the most common used for measuring.
It is the most common.
Yeah.
C scale is typically used, as I'm, my reading goes, somebody can correct me, for lower frequency sounds such as bass units or
don't know, deep sounds like the drone of an engine or a diesel engine like on a train. Okay, and that's probably why the beautiful wail of the horn on a diesel is at a low tone, because it travels further through the atmosphere.
What would the a NASCAR or a stock car fall into that?
But with NASCAR, the tracks that I've seen have all referred to the A scale and have not measured the C scale.
Okay.
Would there be an authority on who presided? Gave you that information?
Gary Gillum.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Stacy Whitfield?
In everything we've been presented, that motocross track is shown, and I don't know if you can bring the picture up again. Hopefully I won't be as shaky this time. Okay, that motocross track right there is very, very close to my property, to my neighbor's property, and to my other neighbor's property. Okay, what kind of sound levels are going to come off of that? Being so close to our homes. When I was out there with the VSEC people, I took a measuring device with me. And what I was told was going to be the opposite side of the track. Our house, our home is right there, the opposite side of the track. I measured at a little under a half mile. So they're saying that from the center of the track, the half mile does not encompass us. It's my understanding after reading on decibels and stuff, that OSHA considers, I believe, it's about 80 decibels to be damaging to human hearing. What is that going to do to our home? Are we going to have to wear ear protection in our home? Is that somebody else imposing what we can and cannot do on our own property, a home that we bought to retire in, to spend the rest of our lives in? Are we going to have to listen to those decibels for, they say 14 days, for 5 hours at a time in our homes? What kind of peace is that? I'm going to go back to the master plan that says, you know, you guys are supposed to be preserving the, I'm going to get upset.
You're doing all right.
You guys are supposed to be preserving our homes, too. And with this racetrack there, and what these people are presenting is not going to preserve my home and many of the homes in that area. Shady Lane's closer than we are. What are they supposed to do? They're going to have more noise than we are. This noise level is infiltrating my home. And I don't really know what else to say except that, I work, I pay my taxes, I do my dues. Now my home is going to be ruined because the noise levels are going to be so high. And like I said, 80 decibels is what I've heard is damaging to the human hearing. And they're saying it's going to be 77 to 83 at my home. I just think that this whole thing is a really bad idea. I think it's too close to residences, and I think the noise levels are going to drive people away from their homes and decrease the values of their homes. You know, we've sunk everything we've had into our home and the property that we own. If we're going to get away from this noise level, we're going to have to sell. Who's going to want our home? Mr. Gammon? Is he going to want my home? He says, sure. But nobody's made any offers. There was a real estate agent who said, oh, it'll just increase your values. Nobody's made any offers. Nobody's approached us. Nobody's asked us. Nobody has offered us anything except detriment to our homes. Getting to our homes, having to wear hair protection. I believe in one of the meetings a gentleman said, so what if you have to wear hair protection? You have to wear hearing protection. I don't want plugs in my ears when I'm going to bed. I've never needed them before. I don't want plugs in my ears or earphones on to be able to hear my television because they're having a race. Now, I'm all for, you know, do what you want on your own property. But when it starts affecting me and my property, I think that's wrong. 68 decibels is not going to affect me and my property anywhere near as bad as 77 to 83. And put my hearing, my family's hearing, my neighbor's hearing in jeopardy. Thank you.
Brian Wade.
Thank you. Brian Wade, Springfield. First, let me clarify the record. I cannot take credit for Mr. Gammon's attribution to me for advocating the Emery Creek Racetrack. I did not. And if Mr. Gammon wants to check the record, he can do so. With regard to this particular condition, I reiterate what I said earlier about the error of law. Planning Commission, we have to assume weighed and considered those issues. And I'm not a sound expert. I don't know the understand the DBA versus the DBC, but it sounds like maybe all you need to do is add the A to the end of the DB on the 68. And Mr. Ashley pointed out that he considered the Emery Creek analysis when coming up with that decibel level, which was approved by the Planning Commission and affirmed. So maybe that needs to be what needs to be done here. I would also suggest that because Mr. Gammon said that he does not know where these particular events will occur on this 804-acre or 5-acre site, that the condition be left in place and that they seek a variance under Section 7 when, in fact, they have a specific location that they're going to do an event and they have evidence that the sound will exceed 68 dBA. Because if you'll recall at the last marathon hearing that you had, there was an anecdotal comment made by one of the engineers on behalf of the racetrack suggesting that they had revved up some cars and that they did not exceed the 68 dBAs. That's what they told you at the last hearing. So if they didn't exceed it, and there's no new evidence to suggest they're going to exceed it from some specific location on the site, then why would this board want to put themselves in a position to upset the neighbors, potential property owners or other developers who are watching this particular proceeding? There really isn't any need to do that until you have some evidence to suggest otherwise. And I go back to Mr. Morrow's letter, which I referred to in my initial comments, and I think he said it better than I can say it. Again, this is the owner of the Branson Creek Golf Club, which is close by this proposed development. He said, when choosing to invest in the Branson area over other opportunities, we